Well, I am, as I said before, so grateful to be back at St. John the Divine. I guess I always need to have notes in front of me. And to be so welcomed. I know Jackie as well has been so welcomed. Many of you know, of course, that it has been almost exactly 8 years since I left this place as your youth worker to be newly ordained and then to take up a new ministry at St. Mary's in Oak Bay. 8 years. Wow. And perhaps fewer of you will know that when Jackie and I first came to St. John's, got it right twice, we're on a good roll then. When we first came, it was actually in a profoundly foggy time in our life journey. It was only shortly after I had experienced a significant vocational upheaval, and the way ahead for us was far from clear. Fortunately, we landed here. Among so many people who received us with incredible warmth and welcome. Now, back then, that fog metaphor was more than just a metaphor. It was very real to me, and it had its roots in a fresh experience on the waterways with some old friends and their 24-foot sailboat. At the time, the owner had kept the boat in a little bay on Gabriola Island, and he wanted us to move it down south to a new mooring in Cabro Bay so that we could use it more often. So it was decided that three of us would sail her down over the course of 2 days. The first day was lovely, and we were able to sail and motor until we got to our anchorage in Montague Harbor on Galliano Island. And there we spent the night. The next day, however, the weather had changed. And the big challenge for that day, we knew, was going to be to cross over the route that those big ferries travel between Swartz Bay and Tsawwassen. So we had planned to come down through Captain's Passage and between Prevost Island, which is a little island tucked into a little armpit of Salt Spring Island near Ganges, and then we would sprint across the ferry route when we knew the way was clear. We would know it was clear by listening to the marine traffic. We had our radios. We knew we had all the right stuff. And we had our charts. And after we crossed over that big passage and that difficult passage, then it would be clear sailing right down past Sydney Island into Cordova Bay and into Cabro Bay. The plan was clear. However, just as we approached Captain's Passage, motoring because there was very, very little wind, a dense fog boiled out of the passage towards us. We had no fancy radar, just a paper chart and a digital version of the chart on my iPhone with its GPS signal, which in those days was a little bit touchy, and a depth sounder and our eyeballs. We slowed right down. We hugged the coast of Prevost Island as we crept our way around. It was a very tense journey. Mostly, we were surrounded by fog. Only knowing approximately where we were by matching our rough GPS on my phone teensy map with the bigger map, every time we saw a vague glimpse of rocky outcropping, we would match it up and that image would come and go like a ghost. Eventually, we made it to the Channel Islands, which are these little group of rocks just before that final perilous dash across the ferry route, and we still could not see a thing. We circled the Channel Islands a little bit slowly because from the radio traffic, we knew that besides the ferries, which were predictable at least, there were also two Navy training ships in the area. And they were meandering about, and we still couldn't see anything. We could only tell where they were when they would blast their horn and when they broadcast a rough position, and we could match it to the charts. Once, we caught a fleeting glimpse of one of these ships as it loomed out of the gloom just for a brief instant and then faded away. Sometimes the way ahead isn't clear, but you still need to keep moving. And it felt a lot like that to us nearly 10 years ago as we navigated our uncertain journey, step by step, feeling our way, not even with a chart to match up with these ghostly glimpses of hope or hazard that we came across. And it feels a bit like that as we hear nearly all the readings this week, too, which is what brings that memory back to me this week. For one thing, there are profoundly challenging elements in all of today's lessons. In the reading from Genesis, we cannot help but feel shattered by the very suggestion that either that God would even suggest that Abraham do this horrific thing. I mean, just the idea that he would sacrifice any human being, and then on top of that, that he would be asked to sacrifice the son on whom this famous promise rested, for whom Abraham had already done a terrible thing, right, when we heard the reading last week, pushing Hagar and his other son Ishmael out into the wilderness. And then, for him to do so, in this case, without argument. This is difficult and foggy terrain for us to enter. And then this section from Paul's letter of introduction and instruction to the baby church in Rome, the center of empire with a capital E, is so full of words and concepts that we mature Christians find problematic. We, who are struggling with the vital work of decolonization and the church's historic complicity with empire. We, who only in the last century and a half in North America have managed to retreat from slavery and still struggle with the systemic effects of being bound to a dehumanizing view of the other. We who, in our so-called enlightened stage of our spiritual journey, have difficulty with the guilt-inducing effects of dwelling on sin. And even Jesus' teaching to his apostles in preparation for their missionary work, today's last snippet is just at least better than last week's challenging language of conflict within families and that word, "I have come not to bring peace, but a sword." But those earlier words still ring in our ears as we hear talk of reward for those who help the righteous. And who are we to call ourselves righteous anyway? And yet we set out with Abraham, not understanding at first, just gathering supplies and starting out, groping in the murk for each step along the way, hoping to see more clearly. And perhaps that's the first clue, our journey towards perception. Our English translations mask what is clear in the Hebrew story, that the root for to see, or the passive to be shown, are threaded throughout this whole story of Abraham's journey and the binding of Isaac. Where the English reads us to read to provide, where the Lord provides, the true root is to show or be shown, to see. And that leads me to reflect that this is really a story about Abraham's evolving perception of God, rather than some arbitrary aptitude test by a dangerously unstable deity. Perhaps the reason Abraham is silent, it will end eventually, right? For those of you who didn't hear on the live stream, there's the blessed ringing of bells next door. Perhaps the reason that Abraham is silent when God first speaks to him is that he is surrounded by a culture whose gods regularly demand such a human sacrifice. Twice before this, when God has uttered promises that seem far-fetched, Abraham has reacted visibly, either to begin to argue, "How will I know that you have given me this land?" he says. Or simply to fall on his face laughing at the absurdity of their being parents in their old age. But just maybe, this God of so-called promise is no different than the other gods after all, to ask him to do this. So he just gathers the wood, calls his son to him, and joins him on a 3-day pilgrimage. And we journey with them in the fog, wondering if we have seen what we really saw, if we have really heard what we think we heard. And perhaps Paul is merely speaking to the Romans in metaphors that they would understand, being surrounded and weaned in the military imperial complex that is Rome. Every time you heard that word instruments, by the way, the word there really refers to the things that you wear and carry with you as a soldier: your armor, your tunic, your scabbard, your sword. And then, of course, there's all the language around slavery. Perhaps that language about slavery and sin actually begins to make sense as he draws his readers to a new perception about the insidious demands of being bound to one set of values over against, well, I won't say freedom, but rather over against the demands of being bound to a law of love. Even we at the beginning of the 21st century are beginning to realize how the brokenness of past systems and injustices continues to bind us, even as we catch glimpses of the light through the gloom and our paths are altered ever so slightly until we see the next rock looming up and we realize we aren't as far through the journey as we thought we might be. And Jesus' final words about rewards, perhaps, brings the most light to our journey. Because most of us know already from experience how practice, any kind of practice, brings new perception. Whether it is that one's actual playing or singing of a piece by a composer brings us to a fuller understanding of the message of that piece, brings us closer to the composer's mind and soul. Or one's going through the motions, following our Tai Chi instructor's guidance, brings with it eventually a sense of that inner balance and centeredness that we couldn't fully grasp just by reading or thinking about it. Or how our practice of compassion and hospitality brings our body along pathways of divine humanity that our souls seem to catch up with only after the fact. That in fact, our perception of God and self and other is transformed, and we see things more clearly now. Our sailing journey did eventually come to a peaceful end. After seeing the Navy ship come and go a few times and hearing on the VHS radio that both of those ships were now clearly far away and that all the ferries were passed, we pointed our head due south and opened up the little outboard motor to the full and prayed a lot. And just as we passed the point of greatest potential danger, we began to see more features around us. There was Portland Island on our right, with all of its rafts of floating kelp, and then Moresby Island on the left, and then we were out of the fog entirely and we could see for miles. Eventually, I think, seeing or being shown does become provision, being provided for. And this often happens to us in prayer, doesn't it? We cry out to God with our needs and the needs that we see around us. And in the process, we continue to engage our hearts in acts of love. Eventually, our prayers begin to change us. We begin to see as God sees. And this gift of sight begins to fulfill the deepest need, both within us and in God's beloved world. Wherever you find yourself on this journey, wherever you, as a community of faith and practice, find yourselves, may the God who is faithful bring you to where you can more fully perceive the promise of blessing fulfilled in this world and in the next. In the name of the holy and undivided Trinity of love, may it be so. Amen.